special operations in Indonesia. And we've spoken about the recent key changes throughout the other services. The operational subsidy grew by 5% a year, which is due to inflation, as I mentioned earlier. The pay revenue as of the current year has declined from the prior year, and this is because of the state of our aging rolling stock, which every year becomes more challenging to operate, and also the greater higher incidences of crime, which makes rolling stock availability less. The capital investments, though it's been happening, it's been slow to show the additional returns that we expect to generate from investing in our business. And also the fact that the capital investment does require additional maintenance, and that's increasing our operational expenditure. The business is underfunded, as I mentioned earlier, mainly due to the mandate to run our own business operations in mainland passenger services. What we are in negotiations with National Treasury is to grant us funding, a reallocation from our capital subsidy to our operational subsidy. In the current year, we requested 1.6 million, but we only received 800 million, and this leaves the cash flow to 599 million. So we really need an additional 800 million, but also going forward, we'll need an additional 1.6 million in subsidy, which we feel being transferred from our capital subsidy. The final page just highlights the performance of the industry as at the end of February 2016. As of 2016, we had a deficit of 321 million. This is projected to be about 567 million as of the end of March, our year end. That concludes the presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Vasa, for presenting. Very much, here's a presentation from Vasa. Can you be able to engage with the presentation? We'll start with Honorable Singa there, followed by Honorable Pika, Honorable Spande, and Alavaja. Honorable Singa?
Thank you, Chair, and recognized actual Honorable Chairperson. In her welcoming words, she referred to the very bad situation caused by the damaged assets. And I want to latch on in terms of the presentation on page 10, where phase E is expressed as a phase of growth and expansion. Also, page 15, where under service excellence, phrases like superior performance, safe, reliable, and affordable, dignified travel experience, and lasting impression are just some of the catch phrases. Also on page 17, where under solutions, the phrase stabilize the current service is mentioned. Now, Minister Peters, in opening at the start of the briefings on Wednesday last week, reacted on a question on the decline in passenger trips, which was expressed in the annual performance plan 15-16 opposed to the annual performance plan 16-17 from 550 million to 500 million trips, and I had a concern about that, and I thought it was a typing error or some administrative oversight. However, Mr. Peters confirmed that it was actually numbers in decline. Now, this 550 million referred to the amount of trips per year by Sosa Loza and the metro rail of six of our metros, out of which Cape Town has 600,000 daily commuters, and the Cape Metro being one of these six metros, but representing 32% of the market share. Now, following a nearly unbearable phase of arson attacks, theft, sabotage, malicious damage to property, and vandalism, just 4 days ago, 10 coaches were set alight. Currently in Cape Town Station, we've got 5 out of the 25 platforms being totally paralyzed in terms of operations. And this morning, I heard of a whole list of services that was just cancelled. Fact is, rail should not be losing market share, but we are. Passengers and commuters are losing confidence because the service is unreliable and they don't feel safe. My question therefore is, what are we going to do, what are you going to do to improve your involvement directly and specifically with SAPS, because it's all about arrests, investigation and convictions. What are you going to do to improve the current ratio of railway police in terms of the amount of people per line or per platform? What are you going to do in terms of security of the general rail reserve? And what are you going to do in terms of protecting the assets? Because in coming from Cape Town, I'm aware of what we need to comply with the needs. We need about 140 train sets, and currently, you know, we've been cut down from something like 87 now to 81. We are really battling, and I'm sure we're battling all over. On the 4th of April, I attended the Westgro workshop where the Prasa Group CEO was also present, and that was on the improvement of commuter productivity. And there I learned that 95% of public transport users are made up of low and middle income groups, which really talks to the market that are severely affected by the situation. Chair, on a balance sheet, the real assets are the users, and therefore we have a big responsibility. So we cannot afford for rail to be in a decline or in a state of losing market share. So the guarantee for support is leveraged by an increasing level of confidence through the reliability of the service and by improving safety in terms of person and also infrastructure. So my connecting question then to that is, will you commit to get more involved? You have mentioned that you've set up a meeting this evening, which expresses the urgency and sincerity from your part, but we need a continuous action plan. We need to break through on this, because certainly up to now, you know, things are not well. Could you also review and share with us crime statistics and the differentiated indication of the amount of arrests, investigations and convictions in different categories, in terms of property, in terms of assets referring to trains specifically, and then also related to the safety of passengers. Then on page 17, under solutions, in terms of strategic considerations, I see that you've mentioned, and maybe it's just phrasing, okay, but what you said there under the fourth bullet, to provide an integrated transport network. I'm sure that FLASA is also has a cooperative intention, and therefore I would also like to see, unless it's not a consideration, but also see, not just be a driver, but also be a partner in other integrated forms of transport, however it's not expressed in that particular way. Then I've prepared two questions for the group financial officer, and that is on page 29, and it pertains to the depreciation and impairment and amortization policy and forecast formulas. What I noticed is that in terms of draft budgets going forward, there's about 1.5% increases, which is in line with a normal depreciation trend. But then in terms of the forecast and actual of 2014-15 going on to 15-16, I see a huge decline, and then a jump from the forecast to 15-16 of about 54% to what is budgeted for in 16-17. So therefore my question pertains to the specific policy that you apply and also the forecast formula, since this definitely is a very forecastable asset item. And I question the jump from 3% to 54 back to a trend of 1.5. Then on page 32, we've got a detailed 2016 million term forecast, and I'm looking to the item on insurance recoveries. For 2015-16, I also see a huge expected, since it's a forecasted number, but maybe a double up on insurance recoveries. Any particular reason for that? Although I recognize that it's a forecasted number, but surely there's a big Father Christmas in expectation there. And then also, since there's been particular court cases, alarming the situation of third-party claims that might run up your desk, and therefore my question is, apart from the normal third-party insurance that I believe we have, does this also cover any liability that might occur based on these particular court rulings, or is it just property, third-party, which we currently have undercover? And then also, whether you take any historic losses on assets in account in insuring the assets going forward, and that's based on my assumption that we also have trains and train sets under some form of short-term cover. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Vika.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you. We are blessed to have a full chairperson.
There's one chairperson and I'm still asking.
Chair, I just want to check, because the last time Brother made a presentation, Honorable Sbanda, okay, asked about the stations here in the Western Cape that are in a very bad state. So I just want to check if you've been able since then to investigate and discover if that was true, and what is going to be happening in your because there's something that talks to the modernization. And also to check if we have been able to investigate here in the Western Cape. Did that teach you to tell that maybe there are some others outside the Western Cape? Because if it is true that there are stations here that are in that very bad state, no lights, there's a train that stops in the middle of nowhere, how many of those do we have in the whole country, and how do you plan to deal with such kind of a bad situation? And lastly, about the trains that are being banned. In most of the cases, trains are banned because of the delays in most of the cases. I'm not saying that's the only reason. One would then want to check as to if Russia has a plan to try and deal with the delays, because you find that sometimes trains delay by more than an hour. People wait until they become impatient. So I'm not saying it can be done away with, but maybe I think because it is causing a problem, there should be a way of trying to deal with it, of trying to reduce it, so that if people want to do their own things, they're not going to say we are doing this because trains are delaying. But if you listen maybe to these people who are talking about the trains, you hear that there are delays almost everywhere. Durban, Johannesburg, Western Cape, and everywhere. To check if there is a plan to try and refuse it. Thank you.
Thank you. Arashina, can you use it to prevent?
My folly.
Arashwande? Arashwako?
Thank you, sir. I was not left on the line. You took me by surprise now. Let me welcome the presentation by Pastor Chair, because in reading the APP, it answered some of my concerns that I raised when they were here, I think, by the end of March, I think so. Chair, when I was reading the APP, looking at the organizational structure, I see that on the structure is the board of directors. I was just asking a question. This is going to become a public document. Where is the minister there? The minister of transport should reflect there that the board accounts to the minister of transport. Coming to the presentation, Chair, I observed that PRASA is working towards subsidizing an individual. I'm thinking of a situation where a person like myself, who is not in that bracket of being subsidized by government, I just decided to pack my car and take this public mode of transport. When they are working towards subsidizing an individual, and by doing that, I was addressing the other environmental challenge. Where does my case lie when they are working towards subsidizing an individual? What is the situation now? And also on their program of economic empowerment and skills development, there's a good thing there that there are four focus groups. I am thinking of the spouses left by those military veterans. How about in the long run, not during this MTF period, they are also considered the spouses of those military veterans. And also on page 26 of the APP, there's something that talks on skills development and job creation. Where they refer to a target group as black citizens versus Africans. Can I get clarity? Is it correct that it's termed black citizens? And also the issue that their intention, PRASA is intending to deliver world-class high-quality service. I'm thinking of the issue of affordability, given the category of people that use that mode of transport. We welcome the world-class service, but we want to strike a balance, affordability versus the world-class service. Thank you, sir.
Okay. Honorable Masagan.
Thank you, Chairperson, and welcome the Chairperson, Congate Marcus. Last week there was a strong allegation that we are bewitching female members. Comrade Sheila made that very strong.
Yeah.
And the young lion chaired the meeting very well, chairperson. Yeah, he was mighty. But today he's sleeping. Thanks, Chair. I only have one question, and welcome the report from the professor. On the issue of contribution to the 9-point plan, the local frame manufacturing and those trains are going to manufacture. Where's the partnership with Transnet in this regard? Because you see, Transnet has got another program, even exporting trains to Mozambique. Do we have two regimes in South Africa, when, or three, because there is Gautrain railway system? So that's the issue, Chairperson. I thought I should raise it. It might be here because it's a slide, it's a summary, but somewhere probably it is well kept. So I hope there's no competition between two state organs. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable
Recycling.
Okay, let me give it to the Chair.
Let me just, you already asked me to say something. No, Chair, thank you very much, and welcome back, like others. And going to the targets, you just had a question about the targets. When I was looking at the big book, I think by seeing the previous target and what was met, and I was asking the question, because we have a baseline in terms of the target of the previous year, so the corporate plan should be able to indicate that. So I was asking, is there any reason specifically for that, maybe? Number two, corporate plan, some of the targets, when you look at the targets, for an example of the social laws and aid, drop by almost a half. Now I'm asking what's the reason, because if you want to pursue the NDP objectives, which project that there must be access to people who live in the rural area, particularly those long distance passenger rail, when the numbers drop like that, what is the reason? While I'm on that issue, the 600 million issue, that was a 600 million deficit issue, I think we did have some conversation the last time around. So I just want to understand, is this an influencing point that begins to suggest that management must now manage this downwards in terms of that? Or what is the real reason in terms of particularly the main line? Number three, just want to understand both the presentation and the corporate plan. Where there is a differences in terms of your presentation, contradiction between the corporate plan, for example, and what you present. Should we take the corporate plan as the one that makes the determination? Or what should we, which one should we take? For an example, I just want to get to the when you look at the page 101 of your corporate plan, and you look at your presentation, you see that there is a difference of what the DOT would have said in terms of PASA going forward, in terms of the APP, and what actual PASA said. So which one would you take? Would you say that your figures would then be one that substitute and basically become the determining factor for that of what DOT would have said in their ATP? Chair, can you just indicate while we are on this issue about the real estate? The real estate or in terms of PASA, in terms of performance, is about the prophet making Asian visions currently in the Prasa. Would you say that the real estate is the one that is performing beyond any others? Just to comment about that, because I see the what you're saying, the CFO, what was saying earlier on. Then I had something else. Let me leave it there, Chair, and I'll come back.
Thank you very much. Thank you, colleagues, for being so good to me. And I think even God was so good on a number of fronts. Let me just say that the looking at your personal expenditure was very high. And when you look at the vacancies that are there, much as there are certain vacancies that have not been filled, but the personnel expenditure shows growth in this regard. What could be attributable to this type of a gesture, which one sees from time to time, that much as those may not have been filled, but the personnel expenditure really goes up and up and up. I have been covered on the issue of Transnet, Housing and Prasa. But what I want to know, obviously it may not come from you, but it's an open book that Housing gets more subsidies, almost three times your subsidy. And is there something that as a portfolio committee, as the department, as people of the Republic can be able to do? Because your haulage in terms of the total number of commuters, it's far more than what Gautrain is hauling, but you're getting less. Has this been spoken to? Was there an interaction with Treasury on this matter? Because to me, it boggles my mind that you every day or annually, there's millions that you're tracking up and down, but you're getting so little in terms of subsidy. What makes this kind of a thing when you have somebody who has not even one side of what you're doing, getting more subsidy? We need to tease out. You should be able to tell us as the portfolio committee as to what are the things that the portfolio committee can be able to do so that they're able to look. It's an elephant in the room. We should be able to look at it and say, how do we deal with it? Do we chew it little by little? How do we really deal with this elephant? Do you chicken out? Because obviously, somewhere they are starting to think of the Soweto line, they are starting to think of other lines which actually they can be able to come into. What do we do? Anyway, having been covered on issues of manufacturing, I will not even venture into that. But say there has been an outlier file in terms of the reduction of numbers of commuters as we are seeing because of the vandalism, the criminality, and so forth and so forth. We've got two portfolios which actually are, to me, very, very important, your rail and your buses, which actually can be able to complement and subsidize each other, because when the other one is impaired, the other one still continues working. How do we, because you're speaking of integrated public transport, how do we see ourselves working in this regard? Coupled with that, we've got the bus rapid transport, which is unleashed from the Department of Transport. What is your integration or your interaction with the bus rapid transport? What is the relationship? Are you moving towards looking into how do you work with the taxi industry in this regard? Because we cannot talk about South African integrated public transport without making sure that every stakeholder who is part of the whole situation is able to speak to one another, because you speak to the taxis, you speak to the BRT, you speak to the other buses that are there. You've got buses in most of the municipalities which actually have been operational. Where do you situate yourself in this situation?
should be able to make your work very, very easy. Lastly, getting the basics right. You've spoken about a number of things which actually you believe you should be. Consequence management is one of them that you have spoken to. But the question is, the how part of things in terms of getting the basic organizational and work culture, the compliance, because every time comes the annual report, you found one thing on a number of fronts, and this becomes repetitive on an annual basis as to how do you deal with these things. Maybe, not for today, if we can be able to get an indication as to the how part of it of addressing these challenges that have been hogging RASA on a number for a number of years. The ICT issues are some of the things which actually are hogging in RASA. So the how part of it, it is okay the way it's written in the corporate program, but how is it going to be executed so that we can be able to follow on this thing? The let me leave the court cases because it has been dealt with, but also to say, looking at the 9-point plan, you should be able to craft your niche market and say, yes, these are the 9-point plan. These are the priorities that we believe as PRASA we should be able to execute, which will be able to be the big wins, because you have been brutalized, you don't want to lie. Brutalized in the media and everything. Now, you need to shape it in such a way that you can have quick wins. And I believe that the 9-point plan can be where you are able to say, if we pick this one and run, people will be able to look at it in another angle, in another line, cloud roads, colored glasses. This is how we are going forward. But I need to say, Group CEO, your media people are sluggish. I really need to say it unapologetically that they are not doing what's supposed to happen. Because we believe that, you know, if it's said, if it's done, if it's seen, people should be able to see the good work that they're doing, other than every time you read the newspaper, you read the opposite of what you know is happening in Israel. So tell your communications unit to really take up, failing which we will bring them here and take them to the washers. We don't want to do that. We only want to take you to the washers, not everybody. It goes with the title anyway, when you get taken to the washers. So I think it will be very important that you really clean the house of your communications unit in Brussels so that you can be able to see the bad good thing. Because one person has spoken here, Honorable Ramakakana, has said, Brussels Press is doing very well. Why can't we hear these things and be able to be taken to some of the things that they are doing, which are good, and then we are able to popularize the good things? You know, the intervention that was done in Mamelodi was the best thing that ever happened. It just quiet. Nobody is saying anything about it. You should be on a weekly basis talking to the communities in Mamelodi, and it becomes something that people are able to know that there are good things which are happening in Brasa other than focusing. The I said the last thing, but I want to also say that refurbishing of stations, refurbishing of coaches, these are the things that you should be able to take to before. Take the TV crews to the stations where you have service so that they can be able to see that there is work which is going on. The trains that have been refurbished, take crews of TVs and all these things for them to go and see what is happening. Our communities where these things have not been done, they will be able to understand that you are on the way. It's a process, it's not an event. You come in to also assist them in this regard. But we would really appreciate if you can be able to deal with criminality, engage the security cluster on this matter. Thank you very much.
She's back. Oral Spandex.
Thank you, Sufficient. Chairperson, I wanted to follow my colleagues to welcome the chairperson and also to apologize that actually I wanted to speak before she speaks because in our protocol that's how we run it. Chairperson, the chairperson pointed me to a very difficult to me because I know which approach must I approach the person. You know, in your absence, there was an incident which happened, whereby, which I think is very, very contradiction. I think it's down, I'll just comment about it. Officials didn't augur well to ask his members. One of the officers from Brasa, when we repeat the question about the issue that the developments about Moloto, we don't compromise with Moloto. We were told that there is no money. And then I responded to say, but you are the ones supposed to make a proposal in terms of the budget to us. Continuously, we're told that there is no money. There is the contradiction about that. It's unfortunate. That's why I'm saying it's a good, because a particular officer is not here. Officer, I believe, to you, sir, is supposed to engage further about this matter. Because it was public, it was a secret. My understanding is that it was in 1.8 billion which was given to the project of Moloto Roads. Obviously, we are expecting some people to account about it. And then also, in terms of the presentation by the Transport Department in their APP report, on page 21, key initiatives over the MTSF, the R57 Moloto Road will be upgraded at a cost of 3.7 billion rands. But we were told that there's no money. I think that one must be corrected. Because that shows that there's no interaction among themselves and some of the entities and the state department. I will appreciate that you must go in and interact. And then, again, Chairperson, there is a thing which I noted here. This is my paper. Yes. May you please, now, the present now, I'm asking them, I'm not going to do the best one, because with the best one, I was going to be hard to our board members. The first question is that, in page 103, in this corporate plan, there's a figure that do not correlate with those for the same 2015 capital program in page on slide 84 on this one. May you please explain for us what is the question problem? And then what also is worrying me is your case position. I was listening to your presentation. You were saying PRASA is technically solvent, but financial. I didn't hear correctly that one. You know, when I read from your own presentation, it's here, under the operational side, the risk of not being able to pay all its operational obligations. In between 1, 2, 3, 4, you said fair revenue shows a decline when compared to fair revenue of 2.9 billion in prior year. That is maybe that is something which I hope that you will assist us. And then also, in terms of rail transport, please, you see, Secretary, there is something which is worrying me. Time and again, we were discouraging of using of consultants. And it is rich that, that rail transport, they have increased expenditure towards consultants. Because to me, if you use consultants in the department, that is education. You are here, we trust you. But why do we make education? And then, another thing which is worrying me, no matter, I don't remember my song, I think it touched something about Mozambique and that. But my question then, I'll phrase it like this. We are having a problem as a country in terms of SADC. And then, what is your role in terms of Trans-Kalahari? Which Trans-Kalahari include Namibia, Botswana, and South Africa, as well as Mozambique. I mean, the projects around there, and the projects around Mpumalanga and Maputo Corridor. I don't know what is the relationship in terms of making sure that were are taken on board. And then another one, citizen, this one you are in me. You see, in terms of local train manufacturers, in terms of your corporate players there, your dates are right. Some of the things which have been achieved, let me show you what said. You've got dates that the council approval for towards establishment was obtained at the end of February 2015. Then somewhere you said, PASA received a record of the decision for environment and authorization on 27 March 2015. PASA received an approval of final ROT for environmental authorization 17 August 2015. And then it had all the states like PASA received the water use license December. Of course, you can't do anything without water. But now we have water and light. And PASA provided to Bela with access on the site on 8 December 2015. My question, since all the stages have passed on, how far are you? What have you done so much? There is anything which is tangible when you go there, which you can touch, which proves that you have achieved something. Because the in your timetables here, it indicates that you are well advanced with some of the things which are supposed to be obtained. And then another one, who reminded me something a few days ago about the things of risk management. Yes, Chairperson, you know, there is a thing which is worrying me. In terms of the plans on your city corporate plan, on page 85 and also on page 84, there is something in terms of the ideas of the plan. But the key question is not about what you want to do or what the risk management is supposed to do. The question is that do you have it or not? Because this is some of the corruption vectors. We lose so much money which we can't even account for. Do you have it? Who constitutes it? Because, you know, sometimes some of the things you take in light, you know, like time and again, we do a reputation, some of the people are getting annoyed, they are not. But why these things are really, really in terms of accounting? So listen, there is a thing which you have touched about their achievements. I'll put an example. One achievement, other people, they don't talk about it, about upgrading of stations, like in the past stage. And also, there is one case at end, which you have done. You are quiet about it. Time and again, we still remind you about your own things which you have achieved. You don't say anything. You keep quiet. And to us, you're supposed to update us that what will be the next station which is going to do the similar project. To you, it's quiet. You do something, keep quiet. And I'm happy then. I can give them a credit on this one. They were charged whereby all, many times, some of the leadership, they were there in the paper. No. Your responsibility is to deliver, not there to be spokesperson. There are people who are spokesperson in that matter. So my last question, Chairperson, is that it's again with Moloto Corridor. I'll repeat it again. How far are you with Moloto Corridor? Because if we don't talk about this thing, everything will be quiet. Last one, to you, Chairperson, there is this area here in Western Cape whereby rape is affected by my city. We raised this thing which matter with you, I don't know how many times, but we never received a response. We are responded. What is the policy response? Whether are those people going to be evicted there or what is it? No, every time we don't get a straight response that matter. Because these people, one time we see them somewhere, you know, it's very difficult to see some elderly people crying. And to me, it's very tight because they do have an, you see, alternative plan. That good people, that is our presentation. Instead of devolution, our churches and our history and this and this, why don't you consider? I don't know whether you have managed to consult with them to hear their plea about that that project. So, Chairperson, let me put it there because I think we have quite covered some of the things. But, Chairperson, if you allow me, only one question. You see,
that's that be the last one. Yes,
last one. Okay. You see, another challenge which was raised by you is that the issue, the person that alluded to the matter, and whenever one would remember touch it, and then I don't know the way they put it. But this investigations, we were told about investigation, but we were never told about financial implication in that regard. And we're not told about how far are this matter going to be concluded, or they're ongoing, and how many people have been arrested. For example, we even mentioned some times ago about the future unit, that if other members' money have stolen so much money, it must be attached. It's quiet, we never say anything, but we're told that there are investigations. But how many are there? We don't know. What is happening? We don't know. Into a person, I will come in the second half.
Thank you, Mr. Wendy. Chairperson of the board, will be able to assure us in the response. I request that you take only 10 minutes in response of all the questions. That means you don't elaborate too much on the stories, but just wait to answer so that we can be able to take another presentation.
Chair, Honorable Chair, thank you very much. What the kind has given us on the show is that there is so much we can talk about with regard to every single question asked, because we've done an exceptional amount of work in this regard here. But I want to say that the extreme concern around the safety, the security, the burning, the fact of what we can commit to the leadership here is that we can prepare a serious report to the creators of what has been done, Chair. We are actually planning to be having, and you should get your invitation by early next week. France will be holding a historical state and security hub next month to deal with a range of challenges. Primarily, also we are accepting the fact that we do also have our inherent shortcomings and weaknesses with the department as a security. We are also engaging on a very regular basis, Chair. We had road shows, we had many regional endeavors with the repertory police. We had an engagement with National Crime Intelligence, I think we already reported earlier that we are actually having a meeting this evening with the National Commissioner, because the matter is not only public outrage and public anger, Chair, but there is a very strong criminal element involved in the process. The contribution to all the Chair, there are a range of factors. It's not only the burning of trains, cable theft, it just covers so many things, and hence we have the peak line in patronage in both our metro rail space as well as our short short of the mail. So we'll pay it to the report, Chair, in that regard. And more importantly, the final details we'll actually have at the security endowment next month to those honourable members whose diaries were allowing to attend. As part of the revealing of the scrap sets are concerned, we can also engage with those sets in that regard, Chair. Around the aim motivation, our good CEO or our good CFO can touch on that issue. I do not touch on elements of what can I say? We have failed the business when it comes to selling our product and selling our image, our achievements. And Roche is correct. But what we can proudly say today is that by the end of this month, a beautiful advertising and marketing campaign will be created. Our media guys have done an exceptional job. We will say that as much as we've been embarking upon a cost containment campaign last year into this year, unfortunately, our communications division has been a casualty in the ground there, but we rectify it now. So we are looking at how best we highlight the achievement that we made. And I think the portfolio committee will be quite proud once you see what we'll be reaching. On the other issues here regarding our PEE, our skill development, if our honorable members can go into our corporate plan into finer detail, we actually have outlined in quite a long, to say a lot of detail, Chair, what the plans are, and not only focusing on Gidela as a partner that will be providing us training in the technical engineering field, but also there are over and above that much broader, even from our human capital. It's unfortunate that we don't have such a time, Chair, as our human capital chairperson, Director Kessler, is here. She'll give you a detailed plan as to what is happening in that space, Chair. But one thing, if there is a need, I would see we can prepare a report for the portfolio committee and we can make sure have it. We can go further as far as the financial climate consumption, the consumer can be in that regard there. Our class of press is doing a fantastic job, Chair. It may seem as though we're not in traditional our target 100% as far as the APD is concerned, but the beauty of the range methodology you're utilizing now will actually give you a more accurate count going forward as to what process is doing. So you may be seen to be hovering between 5% and 41-42% performance achievement. In actual fact, it's much, much better than that. But because we had a single digit performance target, it became basically an intractable system. So there's no way you could actually get a proper and accurate account as to what we had achieved. The manager was correct in her responses when it came to our performance. It may seem as though we have dropped 50% in interviews with social media. We had other questions to whether the reduction the removal of the subsidy is a major contributing factor. It absolutely is. We have raised the matter continuously and we come here. Now, the question that our chairperson is asking, what can the portfolio committee do? Honorable Ramatlakane has extended invitation to the meeting and requesting that PRASA should be having, along with the Department of Transport, should be having a conversation with the portfolio committee on transport and let's talk to the funding issue, the subsidy issue, Jim, because it's a major issue. You look at the example, and there's no disrespect to our partners within the integrated public transport system network. It is true around the whole train. You subsidize the regime. When you look at the example I said in Cape Town, and you're looking at, for example, Golden Arrow and all other public transport partners in the Western Cape Road. And then you look at the example of the subsidy that we are getting here versus the subsidy they're getting, and then you compare the patronage now. Because PRASA in the Western Cape are enjoying 50% of market share. But if you take the fare evasion into account, it increases that in 55-57% share. So if you look once again, your subsidy you're getting in with regards to the ratio or percentage wise of patrons or public transport consuming that you're touching, it's a grossly unfair subsidy that you're getting in that regard. And then you look at the massive networks. So you see, Chair, and I'm saying this one thing with a great deal of respect, you're subsidizing a bus service. Correctly, so there's nothing wrong with it. That bus company, Chair, does not have the responsibility of maintaining the road and maintaining the bus stop and maintaining whatever infrastructure it is using to actually count people from point A to point Z. Whereas now Spain has to do everything. Like, virtually turnkey. So we have to take care of our network, we have to take care of signal, we have to take care of range issues. If a traffic light check is accidentally pumped down on the road, it is not that public transport bus company's responsibility to fix that robot. It becomes somebody else's responsibility, but we fix. In our case, we have to fix it in the event of being damaged, cable stolen, or anything that goes on wrong with it. So you have to look at the subsidy issue in context here, Chair, that the invitation to have a conversation is most welcome. And we'd like to have that conversation as soon as the leadership here is available for us to have it. And then, Jay, just to emphasize on the issue of Malota, Honorable Zubanda is absolutely correct, Chair. Our shareholder, who is our minister, has also taken part of the task. As much as we have said, we can't pursue the Malota Corridor project without any funding. Our shareholder, who is our minister of transport, is of the view that we should be coming with a different approach. We can't be throwing the towel in. If a crucial project that must unfold, we have to be seen as part of taking the lead in that regard there, and therefore we have to make the necessary arrangements. Once again, it goes back to the question, what does the portfolio committee of transport do to assist us to ensure that we actually get the Malota Corridor project off the ground? So we will come into Chair once again, and I can engage you on that discussion. And then the point is taken, Chair, with regards to our shareholder not being teaching on the corporate structure, but still I'm sure that we can correct. It wasn't done with respect to basically looking at the very end of the year as a company, but not we intend or undermine or disrespecting our shareholders. We have the time limitation. I'm not sure if there's anything of crucial issue that you'd like the CEO to respond to, or whether you'd like the CFO to respond to. Okay. By virtue of the time limitation, if needs be, then we can take another 2 or 3 minutes to see how it's covered.
Thanks, Chair. I must say that I really wish we had time. Because today you've raised quite a number of critical issues that could take PRASA forward, that needs to be interrogated from a PRASA perspective. And when you have raised such good questions that need engagement, you give us 10 minutes. It just becomes difficult, because we would also like to engage with you and ultimately get some guidance and also asking you what can you do for us as well. There are a few issues that I'd just like to deal with. The Honourable Chair asked the question of how. Honourable Minister, there's a lot of Honourable Chair, a lot of work that is being done. We haven't scratched the surface on some of the things that we are trying to correct. Please be aware and brace yourself that when we come back in the next financial year, there will be things that are still not at the level where they should be, because we are dealing with some structural, fundamental, ingrained issues that are being corrected at the present moment. But I think we need to deal with the issue of how and maybe engage you a little bit on it. On the issue of how train, yes, our funding model has also looked into some of those issues. I think some of the issues of what needs to be done are going to be addressed in our funding model. Now, addressing them in the funding model does not mean that once you know about it, you will then have the money to do it. There will be the second leg where you have to engage all the necessary stakeholders to get them to buy into this proposed funding model. They will also have views on it, and ultimately we will sit down and say this is the level that we are agreeing upon. It has been said that if you look at the LSM, it's the lower two, touching a little bit on the middle class that we are facing. But the subsidy that we are getting in relation to how train and maybe in relation to other modes of transport seriously needs to be looked into, especially if you want trains to be the backbone of your strategy in the movement of people. So with regard to them expanding their network to Soweto, we had two meetings with them. We are very much clear with them that we have a mandate, the areas that we are servicing, we don't see why they should come and service those areas, that network. And we are saying they are getting the money, and if they have the money, maybe they should give it to us, because we are already in those areas. From a housing province point of view, we had a meeting with the MEC, and we had a meeting with Gautrain in that regard. So we are engaging. I'm not sure about the success of our engagement, but the discussions are really taking place. My chair has dealt with the issue of Umloto. We will look into Umloto, but we do have certain constraints. The figures that have been quoted by Honorable Sivan, the 3.8 million relates to the road situation, does not necessarily relate to us. We have not received any funding as PRASA from Umloto, but we do need to be creative. We do need to go and go back to the drawing board with the department, with Treasury, with our board, with Minister, and all necessary and relevant structures to put our heads together to say how do we take this thing forward. On the issue of cross-border, we are only covering doing cross-border as far as the buses are concerned. The partnership with Transnet and PRASA, you'll recall that we have an AU mandate, both PRASA and Transnet, to be the manufacturing hub of the continent. So we are creating capacities on different products. We are looking at the locomotive space at the present moment. We are looking at the train, passenger trains at the moment. There will be areas from a locomotive point of view where we are starting to engage and asking them to assist us from a locomotive point of view. So there are engagements that have started. We are working together. I must admit that maybe before we have not been, but recently we are working to together. Because the question of a world-class service, as it was raised earlier on, of course it comes with a funding and cost issues. The affordability aspect of it, this is why we are coming up with a funding model, because we are going to be saying, if we are doing all these things and we are servicing this category of our communities, and therefore we need to be funded at that level. And that is why I was at pains to say, I really wish we can engage. We will try and respond to some of these questions in writing and send them back to you.
Thank you very much,
I think I must just say you've done it well last time when you responded to him when you were doing it now. I think you can show this so as well. But it really shows that you didn't hear us last time when we were speaking about Umlotore. We said you don't have to get any attractions, you don't have to get any apology. One, Umloto. So yours was to engage with the department. The judiciary, I can see, is hiding himself there. You must tell us what happened. Since you spoke, so you've done nothing, basically. I don't know, Muloto. DG? Okay.
Before you come in, DG, I think it was September, if not August, yesterday. Prasa Sandra were here to come and give us progress, which we said on a quarterly basis we want progress. Indicated that you're almost at the tail end of the transactional advisor together with yourself and treasury and the DOT. So therefore, you can't chicken out. So we're going to the communities to say, yes, it's raining, yes. A lot of train is coming. So you want to put Russia here? Hey, Mure. They are going to Mura. So don't chill out. Please don't. I've seen, Sandra is busy. I've seen those roundabouts that they're doing on the road. I'm quite happy. You can't continue to be in the transactional advisor's ambit, in treasury's ambit. The minister, according to us, when we look at that budget, we think that this is the budget that should be divided between yourself. Then we got coming cut points yourself. This is what I wanted to say. You have said the transactional advisor yourself and treasury, you're almost the tail end. Tell us how far you have gone. Because we don't want to bash these ones for no reason at all.
Thank you, Chairperson, Acting Chairperson. In fact, we've got to the end of the transactional advisor process. In fact, maybe you asked us, it wasn't 40% yet. We received communication from Treasury. They were not in support of the TM1 application. However, they basically raised two issues. One was affordability, that's availability of funding. The other issue was spatial arrangements within Swanee. Those were major two issues. But what they requested is a meeting between the Minister of Finance and the Minister of Transport. Now, the Minister has already reported back on that, you know, session that we had with the portfolio last week. The meeting has been secured between the two ministers. And following the outcome of that meeting, obviously, we'll report that going forward. But the Minister has stated very clearly that she would rather go to the Minister of Finance and report back on the outcome of that meeting. So the whole transaction advice that she's done. Then on the funding, the upgrading of the road network is required to sustain the road network. So it's not two separate things, although it's happening in phases. We know that the short implications of upgrading the road increases the safety on the road, causes increased noise concern on the road, and the current bus contracts are being renegotiated as we stand today. Improving the kind of service that is provided, improving the age of the buses, the safety of the bus. So all of that takes place. That's more the short and medium term interventions. The more longer term intervention, though, is the rail, because it will take us at least 10 years to build it, even if we start today. So that was the application, that was the TPD initiative. The treaty has come to the conclusion that it's not affordable for government. Secondly, to reduce spatial implications for one. Okay, we do not agree that obviously the Department of Transport, we presented it to you in that session that we had with the portfolio committee, which you referred to in ourselves and so on. And the Minister will raise this issue in a meeting with the Minister of Finance. So that's where we are with the work.
Yeah. Yeah, no. We're not moving. Yeah, we're not moving. If you could, you know, one day I remember I was speaking to these people and speak at English. You hear them. They will speak Zulu, they speak in the way with the Shambok. They won't say, no, I understand. Because for them, it's a promise that has been made long time. And it's very bad. It's very bad because the minister also made pronouncements and things not happening. It's very bad. Anyway, thank you very much. Let's wait for you the other full explanation from yourself, CEO, explanation around this process so that you can be able to engage her with your reports. And we know that you're going to engage with you. I was Bande, just one.
Sorry, the chairperson and the honorable teacher. See, the issue of Maloto, risk killing. The Ethiopian minister was there addressing those people. And a lot of statements were said. These people rescue us.
That's one situation. No, thank you very much, Prasha. You are excused. Let's welcome RHR to come and present favor.
Thank you very much, sir.
Yeah, you're right. I'm not sure.
Hey, members, can you say in science like that?
Connection is that type of connection. We've got the USB port. You don't have the convertible code.
Yeah, we don't have a convertible code. So it's the adapter.
I see now.
So you get another chair from your budget, okay? In the store, whatever.
Okay, thank you very much, Aaron Embers. We'd like to welcome RFR, the chairperson of the board, who will introduce the entourage and then give it to the CEO to present. Over to you, chairperson of the board.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we'd like to thank the Chairperson and the committee for giving us this opportunity to present our strategic plan and our APP for 2016-17. Accompanying me today is the CEO and the COO. I'll just give the few opening remarks and then hand over to the CEO to take us through the presentation. As the Vice Chair, the ARPA vision is for a zero carbon. And we know that this is quite ambitious, but we believe that this is achievable. Our belief that this is achievable is based primarily on the fact that every occurrence, in our view, can be avoided, and every occurrence is everybody's responsibility. We believe that we can achieve this with a zero occurrence if we deal, we look at and deal with the risk in the railway landscape. As you will see from our APT last year, we indicated that we would be focusing on five areas, and we continue this year again focusing on those five areas. And we said we focus on those five areas because most of the occurrences, incidents, injuries and fatalities, 80% actually come from those five areas. Those five areas are level crossing, platform chain interchange, people shot by train, mainline derailment, and which one is the last one now? I've mentioned mainline derailment.
Sorry?
Yeah, collision. So those are the five areas. But we can also categorize those into two primary areas as well. And those really, one, dealing with the asset management within the railway, and then the second one is the rail operation. I would also like to mention that we've actually finalized our regulatory impact assessment, and it actually also indicates that we're going in the right direction in terms of focusing on those five areas, and the CEO will go more into that area. What we have also done as a board, we've looked at ourselves and said, you know, we've been around for about 11 years. what impact does it make in terms of focusing on this area and making an impact. And I think what is concerning for us is that even though we're focusing on those areas, we do our investigations, etc., occurrences continue to occur, fatalities and injuries continue to occur, and basically we can never make a commitment to this committee and to the public that those will decrease because they're not, you know, within our control. But what we then decided is that rather than keep on just looking at the output, we need to look at the output in terms of all our work. Whatever the investigations, how do they eventually ensure that there's a decrease in fatalities, in incidents, etc. So the board is now taking the view that we will start focusing on the outcomes to ensure that we start having that decrease. And we are very certain that that will start impacting and making that necessary impact. So with those few words, I'll just hand over to the CEO just to take us through his presentation, and we'll also indicate what impact we've made over the last 5 years, and also primarily focus on those 5 areas that I've talked about. Thank you, Chapa.
Thank you very much, CEO. You've got 25 minutes to give us a presentation. You go beyond that. You'll see me lifting my finger here, so that you're going beyond our time, so that you can be able to engage with you. We've got a brief that must have gone and read your presentation. That's why I was saying you can just summarize that and there and just go to the, you know, key issues that you think are more important so that you can be able to do. Over to you.
Well, you know, once it's
part,
thank you very much, Chair. Thank you very much for the opportunity that we have in making our presentation in terms of our strategic plans. I will try and see some of the slides. I think, though, I need to explain that there's an additional slide that we have provided. And now, the chairperson mentioned the issue of a regulatory impact assessment, technically a cost-benefit analysis that was done. And at the time of submitting that presentation, we have not concluded that particular task, and it was one of our tasks for the year, but it's quite an important one, and I felt that we can have a conversation, so I've added that, and my apologies for that late submission. I think we've tried to show that, in matter of fact, what's our contribution to the 9-point plan that government has, and also what is our contribution to the Speaker of the Nation address in terms of what is expected from the President in terms from the entities, what we're supposed to do. We would outline those links in our presentation without repeating them, and I've shared on many occasions this historical slide or background to say currently at this moment since 1516 onwards, we are on what we call a risk approach, which deals with the risks in the landscape. So we are about mitigating those risks. So you will see our presentation will talk about those risks and how therefore we mitigate them and what impact we'll be able to make, as the chairperson has mentioned, in those particular areas. But I think very important through you, chairperson, is that actually what is our vision? Is zero occurrences. And the underlying philosophy, as the chairperson has said, is that each and every one of these occurrences in our view can be avoided. But most importantly, at RSR, what should keep us on that particular vision is our values. We went through a very intensive process with RSR staff, because it's the RSR people that must live those values. Those values that you see there, the five, were canvassed through the entire organization, and people have agreed that these are the values. Now, out of the values themselves, there are behaviors that you should be able to, as an individual, as an employee of the RSR, to achieve the vision that you actually should show. In other words, if you don't behave as a little bit out of sync with the values of the RSR, then obviously we need to find a way of getting others who won't achieve the vision. what we also did through the process, Chair, we took and said what are the drivers for change, what are the things that we make, and we created this wheel to be able to show these are the drivers for change. More importantly, if you look at the wheel itself, is around the issue of rail security, the issue of asset maintenance, human factors available to get to the zero currency, which is the first circle outside of the zero currency in the particular slide. This is also three pillars that assist us to be able to achieve our ultimate vision, which is zero currencies, that this tripod, engineering, enforcement, and education, needs to all effectively work together to be able to achieve the risks within that particular landscape. This is just our strategy framework in terms of how we achieve ultimately, but most importantly here is that the impact that we want to achieve through each person is zero currency. And the question is how we're going to do that. We're going to do that by focusing on two areas. Risks in the landscape have been mitigated. And the chairperson has said the focus is on five risk categories. Sustainable institutional growth and development. Without a sustainable institutional growth, without people within RSR living the values of the RSR and behaviors that are exemplary to what you want to achieve, you can't achieve the risks in the landscape being mitigated. And basically what we're trying to show as RSR, if you wanted to know which is the most important slides in this slides that we have, you can take that one and can explain externally throughout the entire presentation what it is that we want to achieve. And here's the output. Now the board in this strategy of ours, we as a board have agreed that we'll be focusing on outcomes. So what you'll see, you're not going to see that it's so output-based. There are some output-based targets, but those output-based targets, we're moving towards removing them totally. Because the fact that you've done investigation, so what? You've done 20 investigations, okay then. What is the impact? What are you trying to get to? What is the outcome that you want to achieve through the investigations, the DOI, the audits that you've done? And you cannot be measuring yourself, because you're doing an investigation, you've done an investigation. But is that going to give us the impact of zero currency? And that's why we show at the bottom that the output, at the technical level, this is now at the strategic level, at the technical level, we have a technical plan that we put together, which will deal with enforcement, education, engineering, and human factors initiatives, so that all of those things are dealt with. We don't forget about them, but they're not at the strategic level, so that we improve our strategic conversation throughout the organization. This is just organizational structure through your chair, which will allow us to achieve ultimately what we intend to achieve in terms of our studies. The slide that you see on the presentation shows a bit of a timeline about what have we done as a regulator from 12-13 to what we expect unaudited, what we expect in 2016 as a 95% achievement of our target. Technically, mean one target could not be achieved in relation to our target that we set out at the beginning of the year. I must stress it's unaudited, and obviously after the auditing, we'll come back to the Parliament and produce and share our annual report. But that gives you a timeline. But I will explain the particular presentation slide in more detail, because without seeing the activities that have gone in there and the increase in the activities, you might think 91% in 11-12 compared to 95% in 15-16 is the same. But I'll try and outline that. Now I move into the presentation. Now these are the new slides that I've added. You won't see them in the original presentation, they're in the new slides. Now this is the regulatory impact assessment. We did this project with the University of Stellenbosch, Professor Havenhaar, and it was one of the targets that we could not achieve in the 14-15 financial year, if members remember. We did say there was a target we could not achieve, because at the time we thought it was something easy, but also we didn't have experience in the country generally to be able to perform that regulatory impact assessment, which is technically cost-benefit analysis. We, with our partners in FOT in Switzerland, and ourselves capacitating ourselves to be able to perform this, we are accountable now that we've done, in our view, together with the guidance and assistance from the University of Stellenbosch and our partners in Switzerland, the regulator, that we've been able to produce a regulatory impact assessment, which will then give us an indication, is what we're doing costing the industry more or not? Is there benefit to the activities that we continue to put in, or are we just adding onto the cost base? That's technically what the regulatory impact assessment is. It's a cost-benefit analysis. So that if somebody says, but you're costing us more, we're able to say, no, in actual fact, based on the data that we have, we've added value to the, it's a value add. What value have we added to the year? That presentation that shows, it's got the ad, which means the ad was published in a particular year, the activity, it's got then the number of regulation standards and regulatory activities that we've done as a regulator. As you can see, those given lines are showing how our increase over the years has been in terms of our activities that we have done. Also on the regulatory impact assessment, that will explain what cost and then benefit. What did you mean by benefit, what did you mean by cost? More importantly is that cost of occurrences we have, they're submitted to us by operators. And therefore we take them from the state of safety report. Now versus the value add, which is obviously in terms of transported goods, which is the benefit that we think we add by value of the activities that we have. We did find some findings in the impact assessment around some of the areas that have gaps in terms of regulatory framework. One of them is value reserves, and currently I think you will see that we did conclude the value reserve regulation, but also the second one is an issue around security matters, regulating that case around theft and vandalism. So you'll see as we present in the presentation, we try and actually create a risk discriminator, which is a line at 1% of the cost, which is saying anything above that risk discriminator line is risky that we will focus on, and anything below that is still within our risk envelope, and therefore we should not be concerned about. The RSR regulatory impact assessment, you can see there we've looked at those five categories: collisions, derailment, level crossing incidents, theft and vandalism, and train fires. And you can see that the size of the pie itself tells you the how big the cost has been. So the size of the bubble tells you that is the bubble bigger in 2010 or smaller in 2014, as you can see, but also it splits the chart to say what is the contribution in terms of cost types and which cost types have cost the operator out of those four types that we've identified. You've got also TFR occurrences. We just look at TFR and TRASFR because in our view, if you look at the industry with more than 80% of the occurrences, those are the cost drivers of the industry in terms of the cost that they actually have. Without going into detail, you can read the TFR occurrence cost is issues around theft and vandalism, which is cable theft, the issue of arson, train fires, level crossing, collision and derailment. So those are the cost drivers that we've seen with those particular operators over the last 5 years or 6 years or so. But what we also did then, we took the entire country and put it in a graphical representation at the next slide, so that we're able to show you the bubble. The blue is derailment. It already comes out very high. You can see the number of derailments that are in the system are costing the industry a lot of money. So as the chairperson said, confirming that our view, we didn't have the study before the study was done, but it confirms our five areas of focus, that we have arrived with our five areas of focus. To add value to the industry, we need to reduce the number of derailments that are there within the regular industry itself. The blue is that, and you've got obviously collision, level crossing incidents, it's also an area of focus for us, but also theft and vandalism through protecting rail reserves. And we talk as a regulator about the people that by train, but technically is the people drive the trains is a symptom, yes, of not protecting your railway reserves. And therefore theft and vandalism happens because railway reserves are not protected. So it already shows that our identification of areas of focus is in line with what the regulatory effect assessment is saying in the areas that we can focus. We then, through the chairperson, identified, and I'll explain this cost risk profile. Remember I talked about the 0.1% cost of risk, and at the bottom of that graph, you've got the value, in other words, the nominal value in billions of rands. In other words, even we took the corridor. Is it the corridor to Natal? Is it the line from Durban to Natal, up from Durban to Joburg, or the line from Joburg to Cape Town? And we took the lines, the coal line, the iron ore line, and we looked and said, what value do those lines bring to the economy of the country? What value are they bringing? And therefore, you put that in billions. The graph, you will see, if you look at the bottom one, the right at the bottom, that's the fishing. You've got the fishing and the coal line. You can see that those lines are very good. They're well below the 0.1% cost of risk. But, and if you look at the number of value or nominal billion value that Transnet gets from them as an overall, they're sitting at about 100 billion rand. You're sitting at about more than 2014, more than 60, 70 billion rand in value on some of those particular lines. But the importance is that you then have other lines, in our view, which are above. You've got the Maputo line, which they've worked consistently on, and then with the red one, which you can see is only below that particular line. But you've got the line to Bybridge, you've got some of the lines, the Netco line, which in our view, it's a high-value commodity line. And therefore, there are a lot of high-value commodities that are moving on freight that couldn't be moving on the rail. And that line, in terms of risk, is well above the risk line in relation to that. So this graphical representation just says ASA requires more attention. In other words, those corridors, when we do our plan moving forward, in terms of our audits and the impact that we want to achieve, we will focus our audits and inspections and investigations on some of those lines, without not focusing on the lines below. But the lines below are doing well, which is the manganese line, the iron ore line, and the line that goes to the coal line. Because Transnet is spending a lot of money on those lines. And therefore you can see it from the value that they're actually generating, but also you need in terms of risk to deal with the lines that are above the line, the 0.1% cost of risk line. Then PRASA. Now PRASA is not moving goods, they're moving people. So then we had to obviously do a calculation. There's the issue of a value of life, what value do you put on a particular life of a person. But we did some calculations to be able to come with some sort of a risk factor that we can be able to put in relation to that. Those are the cost occurrences for PRASA over the years. As you can see, the issue of train fires is an issue. In terms of that, theft and vandalism has increased to about 22.1 in terms of millions, but you can see also derailments are a factor in relation to, and the collisions that they actually have been. This is the data up 2014-15 financial year. What comes up now will obviously be part of the data safety report. What we then did, Chairperson, we said, rather we need to categorize them in, obviously they've got categories of lines, which is the Gauteng lines, they've got AZN, they've got Cape, the Western Cape, and the Eastern Cape. You can see there's the bubble there. A lot in that bubble, you see a lot of that yellow. You see the yellowish color, which is the train fire, which shows you that there's a lot in terms of, and also traded on corridors. Red, I think it's theft and vandalism. That's the red. Okay, it's theft and vandalism, right? So you can see on the size, even we place the pie chart even on the corridor itself, you can look at the map of the lines, which lines and how came. So we're able to focus our activities where we can get the best value for our money, best value to our clients as the operators, and we're able to look at that. But you can see that in the Western Cape, if you look at 2014, there's a big red, which is around the issue of theft and vandalism, also a big chunk of that which is train fire in size. But overall size of that bubble in the Western Cape has dropped. But those are the areas that we focus on, per particular line, per particular corridor. We saw that we're able to come up with this particular graph, which then gives you an indication on the at the bottom you've got the gross value add. So it's the gross value add that commuter adds in terms of those particular metros. So we identified all the metros throughout the country. We said, what is the gross value add that a commuter, based on the commuter itself that rides on the train, on the metro rail train, or the possible commuter that could be riding on the metro rail train. To then see that Johannesburg, Tshwane, and Ekurhuleni comes out as obviously lines that at this moment are below the the 0.1% cost of this line, which is weighted gross value add, and you can see the some of the lines, like the final line that has gone above the line. But that gives us an indication, I think, as a regulator, to say what are the areas we need to focus on our activities. We need to obviously focus our activities on the Western Cape, because it shows that natural effects above the roof line. We need to focus our activities on Ekurhuleni, for example, so that it doesn't go above the line. But it gives us an indication of how we split our activities to be able to achieve. But also it gives us a tracking target to be able to say to an operator, you need, if we give you a permit, you need to stay below the 1.1% cost of risk line. Because that's what we believe should be something stomach, should be something we're comfortable with. Yes, we can't get everything down to zero because we are not a perfect world. But what we do know is that we need to track that line so that operators can be able to consistently fall below that 0.1% cost of risk line. And therefore we're adding value to the entire industry. In the next slide, I'm just trying to show, I think earlier on I showed, before I move to the new slide, I showed the percentages, but if you look at the percentages of 95% and look at the 91% in 10-11 that we achieved or in terms of the data, you can see that our inspections, audits and investigations, our total interventions, because this is what we call them, we call them our interventions as the RSR into the industry, have increased to 569. In other words, we produced 569 reports versus 259, which was in 2014-15. We've almost doubled our output as a regulator in the same, in just in 1 year, in terms of the areas that we focused on. But also, as you can see, we've gradually been increasing our intervention. As we used to present, this creates a bit of a challenge as well, though, because it means to an operator, he would like RSR to stay in their offices a little bit longer. So an operator that sees now almost 100% more of RSR than the year before, you obviously want to find a little bit of concern. And that concern will come in the sense of saying, but some of the things you're asking us to do are trivial. They're small. They're small things, and we don't agree with that. Because some of the things, they might look like small things, but they're underlying causes of the challenges of collision. And therefore, we need to deal with the underlying causes. So RSR has increased its reach, and we've done this through our offices that we've deployed in the regions. We've increased our regional presence throughout the country, and that's how we've been able to then achieve those particular numbers that we actually have, which were highly not possible before. This is just, the next slide is just trying to show, have we, so the number of interventions, that are the percentage of the people in the RSR that do that activity. So we increased, if you look at the 14-15 and 15-16, as a percentage of the total staff complement at RSR, we had 23% that was an impact of the staff. But we managed to up that staff complement, which is now 21% of the total value of the RSR complement, to increase the activities almost twice as much. In other words, we've increased our efficiency. We've increased our productivity as an organization. We're producing more with almost the same number of people that we have, through our what we've done to improve the efficiencies of the work that we actually do. RSR compliance and risk interventions, this is also just a same, just a different structural representation of the same information. We just superimpose the inspectorate staff on top of the graphs of the bar graphs that are actually inspections, audit and investigations. I think that is the complete set in relation to the new information that I've put forward. I'm not going to go through, I think the members have said they've seen the presentation. I'm probably just going to move closer to the end of the presentation around finance issues, and then we can take questions. I don't want to repeat the same thing in relation to that. Okay, I think maybe I'll just take, I think it's on the strategic, after the strategic outcome number two, which is sustainable institutional growth and development. One of the things, obviously, one of the targets is obviously to collect the amount of money in terms of revenue for the RFR, which is 123,500,000, which excludes some of the other revenues that we are collecting. But what I'm trying to bring probably to the committee, which is the side that talks about the balance scorecard. I just cannot, you can't see it there that well. But it's the slide that shows all the sort of, it's actually the slide that deals with how are we going to achieve all of these things that you're mentioning. Is there method in the madness? Is that these things that are happening by luck? Or you know, you hit one and therefore you achieve what you achieve. I'm trying to show here to you, Chairperson, that all the things that are happening at RSR and the efficiencies that we're putting forward are not happening by luck. We have an MQS, which is a management quality system, which we look at what we call a PDCA, which is a 360-degree review, but also in terms of a balanced scorecard, we look at leadership, strategy and planning, customer focus, we look at resources management, like I talked about the efficiencies within the system to do more with less. We look at employee management, and we look at our core processes, but also what are the organizational results that we achieve. And we are comfortable to be able to show that the organizational results through this process, which is an independently audited process. In other words, not me saying we're achieving the organizational results. There's an AD, but there's also a separate process which is audited for you to get any bonus, for you to get anything. You need to get a certain amount number, but also that is audited by external people, so that it's not because you like me or you don't. It's a process that is actually beyond reproach, and we're able to make sure that when you achieve it, then you get what is due to you as an employee of the Australian unit. We've done this assessment, as you can see, in terms of the areas of focus, and we've had targets around in the next slide to show that these are the targets that we want to achieve as a regulator in terms of the SDIX score, Service Delivery Index. That's what SDIX stands for. The Service Delivery Index, which says how are we doing against all the other organizations in the country, and we are saying we need to be able to make sure that we get an overall score as a target I think there's a target of 46, but we're saying for you individually within the organization to achieve your bonus or achieve what you need to do, or to us, you must achieve 51 overall. Regardless of what organizational overall score, you need to achieve 51, because 51 then means you are in the very good category. It means the processes are in place, you review the governance structures are in place, you know what you need to do to be able to achieve. And that gets to be, as soon as you get to 51, you're then part of the auditing process. You're audited to check that as an executive or as a business unit, are you doing what you're supposed to do in relation to that? This is just a graph that showed in 2015 when we look at the global SDIX index for South Africa, what it was, and we look at ourselves as a regulator. We have in the 2015, we're sitting at about 38, which is the overall index in South Africa is about 47, both on the input side and the output side in terms of the results, in terms of what we're able to achieve. And we're moving towards that trajectory. We're not there yet, but we as an organization have taken a view with the support of our board that we need to move to that, so that when people say we're not adding value as a regulator, we're able to say, on what basis are you making that statement? Because we have empirical data that shows that what we do is adding value to the overall people that use the train, but also the goods that get onto the trains themselves. I'll skip the strategic risk. I think the other information is probably around. I'm saying the strategic risk I'm skipping because we've identified them with the board and we put mitigation measures in place so that those risks don't materialize into consequences. And that's really what the board continues with this audit and risk committee, to be able to watch over that so that we're able to achieve our overall plan that we ultimately have. The budget information itself, this is the budget that when we presented to the board, they supported, and DOT also supported in relation to the money that we can collect in terms of our revenue. We are expecting a collection of a revenue of 252 million. Those are the categories. The permit fees is still the big driver of our revenue. We obviously, the issue of the capital works or new works in relation to the new projects that are underway in relation to that. And then that's just our expenditure as an organization. We've we've taken that information through you, Chair, and tried to explain in a pie chart at the end of those, almost at the end of those slides, where we've shown the speed in terms of percentages. Currently, we're sitting with 52% of our revenue from permit fees, which you can see is a very important element, and another 24% from technology audits, which most of that money comes from our operator. So close to about 76% of our revenue comes from the, is from operators that we actually service and assist in terms of us. That's why it was important for us to conduct the regulatory impact assessment, to be able to stand in the meeting and say we are adding value. If you say we are not adding value or not based value, you're making that statement. So that when we're able to collect that money, we're able to stand and say, the money we're using is so that we can add value to you, and therefore you're not costing yourself more with the activities that we're actually doing. This is just the budgeted revenue in terms of the previous year. This is like a graphical representation of the same information. The last one, I think, in terms of us, is just a strategic project. NIMS continues to be a strategic project for us. It's around the asset management. If you remember when I told the wheel about the 7 E's, we said in that core area inside there, we said zero currency. Then we said asset maintenance. Now, the issue of understanding the, what assets operators have and how they're maintaining them continues to be an area of focus for us. And therefore, the project was funded by DOT, which is NIMS, continues to be a strategic project for us. And it will assist, I think, overall in, once we have that data, it will assist anyone who wants to know what is happening in the railway space and what type of assets do we have, what condition are they being maintained, what, so that we're able to know what is the value of the assets within the railway system as a whole. It is obviously not an easy project. I know DOT is working very a lot as well on issue around some of the economic regulators. There's some shaking of hands or some work that obviously we need to do together. But at the end of the day, we're looking at the same assets. There's a lot of work that we're also doing with the SADC region, the Southern African Development Community, purely because we want the regulators that were, that came out of the blocks first. And therefore some of the countries around the SADC region are looking to us to give them training, to give them support, but also suggest to them what type of regulatory system should be put in place to be able to make sure they achieve some of the gains that South Africa has achieved. One of the projects as well is the issue of the high-speed rail regulation and related standards. We are busy with that process in anticipation for you, Chairman. The policy has been issued by DOT to say any new projects in this country will be on that gauge. You need to obviously have the same work and not get to the problems we had. I don't want to repeat the same problems with the housing. But that's ultimately what we're sitting with, and that's where we actually... And the last one is obviously the security regulation around making sure that we support the railway police. Because the railway police have a mandate, but they can only go and do so much within that mandate of theirs. They only come there when something has happened. We need to proactively assist them so that they do audits and they do, and then they say, please rectify this. We are the only ones who can then say to the industry, here's the report from the railway police, you must rectify within this time. Otherwise, won't be able, you run a risk of not achieving or not getting your permit as a result of that. Thank you very much, Deputy.
Thank you very much, CEO. Final point, Rao Shinga.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the presentation. My first question, I would like to know what role did you play as a safety regulator in the supply of South African manufactured locomotives that was delivered to Mozambique? My second question relates to what you presented as PRASA occurrences cost. A nice table with a layout from 2008 to 15 that differentiated between theft and vandalism, train fires, level crossing accidents, collisions and derailments. Now, when we look at the current situation that we are in and we reflect on what you present here in the column of 2014-15, the top two, which is theft and vandalism and train fires, they constitute 90% of the total incidents, if I may refer to it as a grouping. 90% of the total incidents
by theft and vandalism. Is this how far you go in just recording this? Or are you going further also in an attempt to try and solve it? Because I believe the solution then is also some form of strategy to contain this in real occurrence and real behavioral change. So therefore, how do you collaborate with SAPD or South African Police Services in also following these, especially the 90% top two category of arrests, investigation and then convictions, because that would definitely go a long way in terms of managing the reoccurring of this. I was very enthusiastic and keenly dived into the slide that you presented on the class of cost of risk profile, which was an expression of a particular risk appetite with a line and the different rail, that one, yes. And then maybe a bit of a technical question, but because it's a particular field that I really worked at and still involved in, but how do you quantify the risk occurrences of a passenger to a rand value in order to then establish the risk appetite above and below where you should focus on? So how do you quantify that risk occurrence in a rand value in order to be able to draw the line? Chair, then I would like to just spend a bit of time on the strategic objectives. And in particular, the strategic objective 1.1, where the strategy is all about level crossings. And looking at strategic outcomes, certainly the performance over time must be measurable so that we can show progress. So the measurability of the KPIs is important, but then also the comparability over time. Now, I battle with this because if I look at the medium-term targets for 16-17, when the expression and the measurement is then described of 100% compliance of 50%, I battle with it. It's either 50% or any other number, but you can never have 100% or 50%. I can live with it in comparison to the progressive 2017 target where you progress from 50% to 100% or 60%. And then also even the next year where you say 100% or 70%. But then all of that is dropped in 2019 when suddenly it moves to 8% reduction in the number of level crossings. That shouldn't be our target. We should be at 100% of objective in terms of reducing it in total. What message do we convey to the general public if we say in 2019 our objective is to reduce it with 8%? That seems like a bad message. Then, so on level crossings, in terms of your medium-term target for 2016, shockingly, Chairman, it speaks of 10% level crossing occurrences investigated. Whose family will be investigated and whose family not? General public look at this and they say, so in other words, the other 90% you're going to ignore. It sends out a bad message, Chairman. So we must rephrase this, we must be more particular in what exactly we mean, because in 2020, this target suggests that we will only investigate half of all the occurrences and that it's expressed here as 50%. This against the expression of page 90 where it says that the vision is a zero occurrence. This just doesn't weigh up and is not in line with what I'm sure the real objectives are. Then when we get to the number of people struck by trains, which is strategic objective 1.2, I'm battling with the same thing, Chen. We are saying here 5% of people struck by train occurrences will be measured or will be investigated in 2016-17. In the next year, Chen, 10%. And what we're saying here is by 2020 only, we will investigate 30%. Surely this is not the intention of this agency. I cannot accept that. So my plea then is to just look at this, rephrase it, be a bit more specific on what you really mean, because it sends out the bad message. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Sunga. Armadina. Okay. Arun Spande.
Thank you, Chair President. First of all,
Sunga Arun Sunga.
Thank you. I'd like to thank the RSR to come and present us, but nevertheless, there are clarities in the supply. Number one, I'll start by this question. On 11th November 2014, you came to present to us. I want to go deeper. I want you to check whether you achieved some of the things. The age comments in that regard, he spoke about the audit. He wants metrics every quarter. The human has to achieve that in terms of our accountability. And then again, there were some few, okay, I won't go to those targets which have never been achieved. Let me leave you that. Another one, I wanted to find out from you, how often are you interacting with other entities? And then also as well as the department. And then as a person, this is another one which is worrying me then. Some people can regard this entity as a small entity while it's not in terms of the functionality. Have you ever try maybe to arrange and what you call it, a study call, in order to learn on how other countries are protecting their lives? I'll make an example, our experience in Japan. In Japan, there is a train plus minus 400 and 500 kilometers per hour, but no accident of rail crossing the line, and it's fast. And fleets, and also the issue of cable theft and others, are things less presentation. Because that, it can assist you to learn some of the things. And then also, there is one which is worrying me in terms of your presentation. See, I was looking at this occurrences cost, and you said you don't have pages on this. Chairperson, he spoke about arson, and then after arson, the intent description, and then after it, the same fires. I don't know what's the difference, because to me, it's the same difference as in a same fire. Because my argument then would be, if you talk about arson, then need up until 2040, 2050, something like that. And then when you talk about train fires, you do have something to present it. You know why I'm raising this question? Yesterday there was a, it is alleged that was a train which was sent down here in West City. Why in terms of the time people leave? If you can clarify on that one. And then another one, Chairperson. In terms of the absence of risk acceptability criteria, somewhere it was discovered that the absence of the risk acceptance prior to the design and the implementation of the National Railway Safety Regulator Act and its adoption of the safety management system approach to regulating railway safety for the baseline information regarding the impacts of the legislation. I wanted to find out how you measure the issue of implementation. I mean, compliance, some of the things, because they can come here and for us to get some regulation, to act and regulation and etc. But as long as no proper monitoring to make sure that all the stuff are being implemented, forget. And then also, Chairperson, I was impressed when you said you had a technical plan. You spoke of, I mean, from your own mouth, you spoke about a technical plan. Hence we have raised some of the questions we have right now. May you please elaborate on a technical plan against the very same question which was asked in terms of compliance. And in terms of the real shift again, what else? Chairperson, my worry, I'm not taking it back, but to hint, and time and again, we come to that question. I recall when we visited you in the office that you told us about some of the things are not working, and to say that you can even close down some of the operations. Now, here is the question. How far is their response in terms, because to us if I was really bread, we even asked you, so, you do that? You said yes. You said yes. So you see, my worry is one separation on that card. This question will come every time when we meet. Because you know, if you say as a regulator ever, you said I'm going to close this if they don't do this. Remember, there are different categories whereby they are doing with their own budget and alike. That's why it comes back in terms of consultation and interaction with other stakeholders as well. How far are you with that matter? Because it's you raise that matter. I'll leave it here. I'll come to the seminars. Thank you.
Thank you, Oracle.
I gave my speaking rights to Honorable Osman. That's why you will come for the second
time.
Thanks, Chair, and members of the board, RFR, and also welcome the report. I mean, the presentation. And improvement in terms of annual performance. If you look at slide 11, and it was like 91, it was 8, going down to 58, but now going up to 95. Also, just a comment. Maybe at some stage, I'm not sure, maybe you've done it before, to have a one-stop kind of a meeting with Gautrain, Prasa, Transnet, RSR, and the Department of Transport to discuss these reports that they issue up from time to time, the state of safety reports, so that under one roof, we debate this issue when major stakeholders are there. You see, material that Transnet also belongs to DPE, but at the end, they are a transport entity, and the same with Gauteng. We are parliament, we can invite anybody in the Republic of South Africa dealing with transport matters. So that we had an understanding that we sing it from the same hymn book when it comes to these issues. Because if we talk past each other, it's very difficult at times. So that we can also check the awareness campaigns and stuff like that, and then more duplications, and are those entities complying with the safety regulations conducted by RSR. So it's my wish, Chairperson, that we have one sort of meeting one day and discuss this matter in detail. When we are not debating the quarterly reports and all those compliance reports, but dealing with the issue of safety. Because when we are here, we discuss, they tell us something, they leave. Since I arrived here, I don't remember meeting Gautrain, except when there was an interaction with the minister party, but we need them as an entity. The railway regime in South Africa, and discuss matters of safety and allocate enough time for that session. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Yes.
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me, as always, the presentation of the RSR keep us awake. We can't fall asleep when you present. It's just as a way of keeping us awake. We keep up that kind of presentation and action, because I think it's important. You have a small budget, if you look at it, but doing very important work in terms of the safety, and including a whole range of investigations. And in your conclusion, I'm going to raise three questions a bit more. In your conclusion, you seem to worry about the Act, the issue about the Act and financing model in terms of the Act. I just want to find out from you, given that you are speaking to us, what worries you, or what is it that you want the committee to take note of and do something about it? Because I think that's the challenge that you are raising. The second one is a tail and a head question. On your slide 5, it's actually on page 5, but the slide is 9. The one that you say the most important zero occurrence, where you talk about risk in the railway landscape, and you talk about the issue about sustainability institution and 5 key areas. I just want to find out, this is a critical zero occurrence. That's the vision that was where you want to move towards. But the number of your ATP, you have a way to write how to achieve your target. I think it was raised by you write 100% of the 50% and 2% investigated. I'm just trying to find out if you can simplify this. Is it you're going to complete? There's a 100% or 50% of 100%. And later you say, well, in that you are going to, in particular when you look to 49, slide 49, the PTR, then you say, only 2% of occurrence will be investigated. Are these matter resource constraints, or are they targets structured because of the resources aspect, the limitation of the resources? And if you were to then say you want to go to that slide 9, the very important zero occurrence, would you think that the way you written the ATP, particularly the hazard area, can go, and the slide up from the lower to the higher, they will start from 10 and then they add by 5 every year. Is it the budget constraint redirected by budget because of the possible what you're going to generate as an income that's going to constrain you to achieve your 100%? So that's really the kind of question. Now, did you, the last time we met and we discussed the issue about investigations and assessment and evaluation, and that was commissions were used in terms of the locomotives. And there seems to have been some disagreement that was supposed to be solved offline, sort of offline discussion that should have solved this discussion about whether the report was carrying or the report didn't really stand, your report in terms of the locomotives.
if you could just brief us whether that offline solving the disagreement where it actually happened, so that we had know at the end of the process we would need to write our report to say that matter was actually your report does stand. And the condition that you are taking, good, are they close to be met by person? There was a conditions that you were stipulating on the report. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you.
If you can be able also to just give clarity on the, as I say, one of you is the challenge of generation renew as an entity. How can the development, how can we as a personal committee be able to assist you to ensure that at least we are sustained? Because I think one thing that is highly important is that the regulatory industry must be highly supported so that you don't depend on anything. Otherwise, you will fail to execute duties. You will fail to, you know, deal with matters that are most secure in safety of our processes. I think you must be able to give us direction. How do you, you know, want us to help? What do you want us to strengthen part of your funding model, or what do you want to do? What you chose?
Thank you, members of the committee. Let me start with the first step, that particular challenge. We'll just bring it to the attention of the committee. At this point in time, we would ask that the board be given an opportunity to deal with it. We're actually still dealing with it. It is presenting some operational challenges in terms of us being, let me put it this way, the fact that we're a Schedule 3 entity, there are certain things that we cannot do. For example, we cannot have a surplus, and we cannot have an overdraft and all those things. So right now, the board is actually engaged with that particular issue. Once we finalize our own processes and we know what our recommendation is going to be to the department, then we can share with the committee. So at this point in time, I would see that we just don't yet need the support of the committee, because we as a board ourselves have not reached a conclusion on that particular matter. So that's the first one. When we were here on the 15th of March, we did indicate that there is interaction between ourselves and other entities, and in particular with CASA. We have raised quite a number of issues. I think when the two committees met with us in housing, and one of those was actually the signaling issue. We subsequently have met, and when I say we, it's not just the officials of the entity together with CASA. It's actually the board, first the chairperson, and then we moved on to the safety committee of the two entities. They meet and discuss all the issues that are problematic or may be a challenge to, between the two. And therefore, we started addressing what's called the signaling issue. Yes, we can shut down entities, other entities, I mean, it's within our powers, but of course, we prefer not to. If that becomes the last resort, should we not be able to find a solution to the challenge. So we did, if I'm not mistaken, we did report on the 15th that year. Next, we started dealing with the issue of signaling and other challenges between our two entities, and I will leave the CEO to just elaborate more on, I suppose, on the signaling issue when he responds. In terms of other entities, we have now also as a board requested a meeting with Transnet to start the same process, so that we have standing meetings between the board and so that the matters do not escalate to the point of having to be resolved by the ministers or even the committee. So we are working in terms of that, in terms of having continuous engagement on board level with the other entities, so that we do resolve our issues. Of course, there is continuous engagement with the department itself from a operational level in terms of the CEO and all the staff, and even at the board level with the ministers around the issues of of our work. I'll leave the CEO to deal with all the other issues. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. My CEO as well will come in where I'm calling it for short. Maybe let me take the first question around how do we calculate this gross value add? How do you calculate? What we've done, we needed to we know how to calculate a value of a commodity on top of a tray. It's the price of the commodity versus the number of quantities in tons, and therefore we calculate that value. We needed to get to the same type of index for people. So we went and we took information of what is the average economic value of a person on a train in a particular geographic area. Now the World Bank and the Human Health Sciences Research Council have got those figures. They say if a person is in Cape Town municipality, this is the value add they add into the economy. If a person is in Joburg, this is the value add they add into the economy. For example, in the gross value add per annum in a person in Joburg is 55,000. The gross value add for a person in Cape Town is 36,000. This is now we obviously then needed to look at the catchment area of a paratrain. In other words, where which area would be able and what are the possible people that could use that service in the event that the service was in a particular condition or it was actually being utilized by those people. And then we, after that, we also had to then calculate the number of people that are on a train. We used the data from Prasa, which they gave us to say this is the number of people they're carrying on their trains. And that's how we got to the cost value add of a particular person. We needed to be able to get an index so that we're able to have a conversation around that particular index. So that's how we actually got to that particular cost value add figure that you see, and therefore the risk that we've actually put out in that information. The other question I think was our involvement on some of the locomotives like in Botswana, Botswana, or Mozambique. Our involvement is as far as probably interacting with the regulators in the other space. They will ask us if they want, but we do have TE as a particular operator. One of the things we're doing now, which we probably in the next round, we're going to give manufacturing permits, specifically a manufacturing permit, because we take a note that as a manufacturer like Kibena now, they are not an operator, but there are certain safety things they must adhere to, certain requirements that they have. And therefore, there will be a manufacturing permit that will be issued probably in the 17-18 financial year, depending on obviously our conversations that we're having with DOT. The other one was around the, maybe let me take the action that it will come in. We do know that there's certain, our act at the moment has probably got certain, it can be improved. When it was developed in pre-2002, we know now more information than we did then in relation to that. So there is a process that DOT is about, has embarked of improving of the act. And some of the things we would want specifically on the act is the act to be prescriptive on how you fund the regulator. Not leave it to us to think of ways and means on how we actually clear that. But whichever way, which is the best option, that obviously would be a process I think DOT is working on, and they have acknowledged some of the challenges, having worked with them in terms of our funding models or some of the things that are mentioned in the Act around funding in relation to that. The other one I think we need to through you, Chair, is in looking at this, we say to ourselves, we want to get to zero occurrences. That slide that I actually showed. That we need to get to zero occurrences. But if we continuously every year are improving, are reducing the number of incidents in a particular category, you can't be increasing the investigation. Because if the incidents are dropping, why investigating something that's going down? Because if you have actually been able to be effective in that area, you should be seeing it by the number of investigations reducing. Because an investigation is a reactive activity. You then pump those skills, engineers, and that into your auditing inspection to work. And technically what we're saying, with the information that we're doing. Yes, there's a bit of a challenge of funding in that as well, but mainly it's around, once you've got the level crossings going and you know the underlying causes of level crossing, and you've implemented an engineering solution. Because remember, one of the things we are saying, on level crossings, we've implemented an engineering solution on the level crossing, and therefore, once the solution is implemented, we should ultimately be able to see a reduction on the level crossing incident. I think the other question that was asked was around, how do you explain the different activities? One is on directives. If you look at that, we say 100% or 50% of the directives completed in that particular year. Meaning that if 50% of the, and we put a number around the 50, we put 5, we put a number. Because what we're trying to do is that the directives that we've issued, they are actually, they take a long time to resolve, but our focus should not be on the audits, because once you do an audit, you should come out with a directive. That directive should direct you towards rectifying a particular problem, and therefore our focus should be on the directives that are issued through the audit, which is bringing our focus to the outcome base, rather than being an output level. And that's what we're saying. Obviously, how do you represent it? What is the best way to be able to represent it in the box that we have, which is the APP? We felt this is the way to be able to implement it. But if you look at the outer years, if you look at the other years, outer in year three, we then talk specifically about the reduction in a particular level in the number of level crossings that we actually have, or the particular focus area. The issue with us is that some of these outputs are impact-driven. They require a lot of collaboration for us to be able to put them on our ABC and be able to put our name next to them. So what we've agreed with the board is that let's look at the outcome, let's maybe focus a lot more on the directives and making sure that our directives are concluded within that particular financial year. So that we're able to then move forward as an organization to achieving a reduction overall over the 5 year period. You will even see, I mean, there's one of the collisions. We said on year 5 or year 4, there should be zero collisions. Technical meaning that we don't expect a reduction, we expect solutions that bring collisions to zero in the particular space. But you only cannot do that in 16-17. It will be highly impossible to do that in 16-17. And that's why then, you know, us convincing the board, we agreed that we can put that in the outer years in relation to. But we stay true to the issue of draw currency. It is not that we somehow paying lip service, and therefore in our strategic plan, in outer years, we go back to what we're saying. Just that it's different activities. We change from directives into the impact, which is the reduction that we expect in that particular area. But we can't be sitting here at this moment and be able to say, we'll make a reduction in next year on level crossings. Yes, it will happen over time, because impact is over time. But if we do that next year, it might not be because of our own doing. It might be because of other factors in the economy that might also result in the number of people using the train that is less and less number of trains. But over a 4 or 5 year period, we can be able to stand as a board and be able to say, we will get to zero currently under the 5 categories that we actually looked at. And the issue of the technical plan, I think what I was trying to say, Honorable Sumanda, was that we have a technical plan which will show the number of audits, inspections, and investigations that we do. But the intention is to drop the number of investigations eventually, not now, but that's ultimately where we're looking at. And the other question, I think Minister Poe can add if I missed, but there was a question around our report, as we confirmed through Honorable Rakanen, our report stands. Our report is on our website on the 1st of April. It's issued there on the 1st of December 2015. We did have a conversation with our colleagues at TRASA, and we have clarified with them, and we have told them that our report still stands. There are 3 things that I expected from them, 3 that they're supposed to submit, and once they've submitted those 3, we will obviously look at them. We don't know now what they're going to submit, and we'll obviously respond so that they can be able to then do what they want to do with the particular locomotives that they require. And I think I just wanted to explain that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you, Honorable Chairperson. I think maybe just to add to some of the questions that were raised, I note that there was one around the plaza hotel cost, which is on the additional slide. The honourable member indicated that it's about 90%, but this is cost, it's not necessarily the actual hotel. I think what this slide is trying to say is that it costs plaza about 28% as a cost. Like in terms of the number of hotels, our alternatives still remain, people's flat by train still remains the highest of the alternatives that we have in any year. And then the other question that was asked relates to, I'm not sure I answered, but I think it related to AG's comments over last year. I know I had just joined Alessandro my first Monday when the CEO put his neck on the block and said we will not have any repeat findings from the Auditor General, and I would like to confirm that there were no repeat findings in the past financial year. The other question was around our interaction with other agencies. We do have a lot of engagements, and I think as both the CEO and the chairperson have indicated, there are a number of interactions between ourselves and the various operators, particularly the three big operators. We do have an engagement plan that we develop on an annual basis, and our interactions vary from a month to month at an operational level to an annual sort of AGM that we have, particularly with PRASA, and we're trying to have the same level of engagement with obviously TFL and Gautrain. In terms of being slide 11, which talks to the RFR performance, I think the question there was that in 2011, 2012, we had 91, and obviously when you look at this, it appears as if we have dropped, and obviously we are improving. But I think maybe the one key thing that the CEO mentioned around performance of the RFR is obviously the way in which we have increased our targets. At this stage, I think we were still, if you look at our APs for previous years, we do indicate the number of audits and inspections that we've conducted. If you look at where we started in 11-12 in terms of the number of audits and inspections, where we are sitting, I think we've moved, I think, from about 40. Therefore, at 11-12, 91% was based on about 40 inspections or so, but below 100 audits and inspections. And if you look at where we're sitting in 15-16, where we're looking at about 500 audits and inspections, and obviously having achieved 95%, and more as the CEO has indicated, that is unaudited information. But based on the data that we've collected and the performance information, according to the way we looked at it and our monitoring processes, indicates that we well set for 95% in terms of performance. The other one was around the study tours with other countries. We do actually conduct study tours. In fact, last year, towards the end of last year, we had what is called the International Rail Safety Conference, which was attended widely by a lot of international organizations who are also involved in rail safety. And we had various examples from different countries. But I think maybe some of the key things that we are learning as we look at as we do studies and benchmarking is that in some of these countries it's just the nature of the railway system. In some instances you find it's a protected system in the same way that you have with Caltrain. How many alternatives do we normally have in Caltrain? When you look at what Caltrain is compared to some of the other operators like Transnet and Rasa, who are operating on an open system, obviously their occurrences are a lot higher. Therefore, when you have a protected system, it is much easier to actually contain and obviously reduce the occurrences to a much more, I mean, something like what Japan has. But also, what we are meaning is that the culture, there are issues around culture that you need to look at. If you consider where our highest occurrences take place, you will see that if people start by train, that is because we do actually, unfortunately, in South Africa, have people living within the rail reserve. The settlements that the
that seem to be springing up next to the rail, very close to the rail, and obviously issues around access are a bit of a problem for us in South Africa. And this is why we are now coming up with a regulation that seeks to deal with the issue of rail reserves, so that we can ensure that our reserves are protected, but the operator has a responsibility to do certain things without necessarily prohibiting access, because I think access is also a very key issue for our communities. So those are some of the things that we're looking at. But we're also going to do a safety culture assessment, which tries to tell us what is our, I think, as South Africans, around some of the operators, what is our philosophy around culture, and therefore so that when you do come up with interventions, you can come up with interventions that do speak to some of these issues. There was a question around risk and SMS. I think what we try to do, the risk-based approach, what it focuses on is really the safety management system. An operator would, as part of their permit application, submit a risk assessment and what it is that they're going to do to mitigate. What then the regulator does is to focus on ensuring that those things that they said they will do in order to improve their own safety are actually done. And therefore, that is why even as you see in our APP, some of the things around closing off directives is based on a stringent monitoring of the risk plan or the SMS presented by the operator, but obviously to ensure that the risks are being mitigated on a continuous basis. And the reason we say 100 or 50%, I think maybe just to add to what the CEO said, we look at 100 or 50% because we do recognize that some of the projects are actually multi-year projects, so you're not necessarily going to be able to close all of the directives that we issued in a year, because it's a corrective action, so it could be an improvement directive, which requires faster to build the bridge. But what we then monitor is to ensure that in every year, the plan that they submitted and the things that they said they were going to do are done at the time that they said they will do them, and obviously that will run over more than just the 1 year. Hence we say to make sure that we at least close the directives. We don't just do the audit for the sake of writing a report, we do the audit and make sure that the corrective action is taken. Yes, I think that's for it.
Acknowledge. Thank you very much. Chairperson, it seems like you've got some injection of your staffing. I'm thinking it's only CEO that is much energy that makes us awake. But I can see the CEO always wears, you know, they adapt to the day.
They
cut short, yeah. You see, or if you can be able just to probably give us the three things that the president must be able to fix up again.
Thank you. Through you, Chair. I think on the ASCO 4000, when we produce our report, at the end there's still information that needs to be submitted to the RSA to conclude the ultimate report itself. It was the maintenance information. In other words, for us to be able to allow a locomotive, we needed to understand what are the maintenance arrangements. In other words, how they were maintained, that particular asset. The second one to us was the issue of the air quality. The part of the deployment plan that they submitted to us will go through tunnels. Now, currently in South Africa, there is no diesel locomotives that carry seafood behind it that goes through tunnels. And therefore, we requested that they do a quality, air quality study on the tunnel, and that was done, I think, a pilot on one of the tunnels in Peel. And we're still waiting for that final report that related to that. Is that test positive or is it negative, and therefore so that we know what to do with that. The third one was the issue of human factor. Which is the validation process. We did the verification. In other words, in human factor, when you do an assessment, there are two things you do. You do a verification of the design and you do a validation of the design. Now the validation report needed to be done, a comprehensive validation by PRASA, so that ultimately that can then be submitted to us, we can assess it. Now that validation has not happened. And that is the third thing, which is the human factor assessment around the economics and the tab layout in relation to that. Okay, according to the CEO, just confirmed to me now that the air quality report has been received today, was received this morning. Around the air quality report, we'll assess them that and then obviously make our estimation. of what that quality report that related to that. So that's where we are around that. I just wanted to clarify to you, Chair, maybe just to explain the two slides. One is the TFR cost. The other one is PRASA cost. On the TFR cost, we broke down, because you know, fires on a train can be as a result of accident or an electrical cause. So we broke that down, and we're trying to, so that we're able to see what exactly, we were able to have data from TFR, and that's why we're able to say nil, because there was nothing that related to accident from them. But on the PRASA information, I think at the time that we came to the committee, we didn't have that split. Because train fires, I think about more than 60% of those train fires, we do know that it is a result of other people that are touching the train, not an electrical fault that has happened in the past locomotive itself. But we wanted to split it, because otherwise we misunderstand, and we need to understand that that's what it is. So that's really what we have said. That will also confirm, Chair, that when we made that commitment to PRASA around, if they don't do anything on the signaling information, we will be left with no choice but to do what we don't like to do, which is to close it down. They did listen. And ultimately, in the last meeting I mentioned, that we now have, and the chairperson can confirm, there was a meeting between the two chairpersons. There's a meeting that took place between the two chairpersons of safety and the chairperson of tech, which happened on the 7th of last week, 7th of this month, which is a continuous meeting that we're having every 2 months, so that those things that are not comfortable with the regulators, that are not given the attention we believe they deserve, they are then pursued. So this matter was elevated, and obviously we believe that there's a lot of commitment from the board and some of the executives in dealing with this particular issue. And therefore, as a result of that, we obviously are happy, and also we've given them a report. Since the meeting we had, we went and we did a full report on signaling equipment around ourselves now, independent assessment of all the signaling equipment within the Gauteng region. And they are then working, they gave us a plan of what they're going to do, and then they're working down that plan as agreed. So that's why we have a comfortability, and we monitor that through our task team. There's a task team that is established, which deals with communication and signaling specifically. And through that task team, these matters have been monitored, and they get a mandatory report. And that's why I'm comfortable that, in actual fact, and these were not there prior to my comments that I made at that meeting in Johannesburg.
Thank you.
Chairperson? In the last meeting that we shared with them, we explained to them that we want all of those things rectified on the signaling report before the next permit submission, which is happening now in September this year. So they, and that's how we agreed, that we want every rectification activity to be before that, because obviously we're actually not going to carry those activities into the new permit cycle. So by end of October, those issues will be rectified.
So the argument of a court case is 1 hour, it doesn't rise anymore.
Around the issue of signaling, I don't know what would be, but what we do know from our side, we are saying to them, and I think DG was given, we actually presented the report to the DG on the signaling, so that department can assist us to ensure that we don't end up with the permit not being issued to PRASA in October, that we make sure that all of that is done. Now, from their side, in terms of they need to do that work that needs to happen. And there was an agreement to say, which even if you go and you take something on judicial review, it is still the law, so you have to comply with it. Until such time that a judge says otherwise. So you can't then say you're not complying with the particular requirements until such time you've got something else.
Okay. You're not sure?
I'm covered. I'm covered.
Okay. CG? I'm fine. Well, we are fine.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. amendment of the act is with yourself. How much progress has made? Can you be able to deal with it in this current financial year?
Chairperson, we've obviously first evaluated the act to determine which gaps actually exist in the act. We concluded that first is in the previous financial year. In this financial year, we've drafted a draft bill, which is very specific portion of the act that needs amendment. And we've just concluded the draft bill. We're going into a consultation phase on that draft bill, which you all stakeholders are also included. And the intention is to have the draft bill submitted to cabinet by the end of March 2010. So this whole year, it will be consultation, then the bill will come back to cabinet in this financial year. It's on the strategic plan of the Republic.
All right, yeah. Okay.
We find you on the other side. All right. Thank you very much for presenting the process plan. You have the energy to keep us awake. And thank you very much, Arasar. Hopefully, we'll be able to engage further with the department the rest of the Arasar. And the meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you.